the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
You know, for years, you pour your blood, sweat, and tears, passion, and purpose into your endeavors. Instead of those efforts bringing value and benefit to the world and future generations, more often than not, what results is heartache, pain, and loss. It so happens that in many cases, this is what happens to wealth. Joining me on the program is the co-author of a new book called Bridging Generations, Transitioning Family Wealth and Values for a Substantial Legacy. That author is Amy Castoro, who joins me now. Amy, I want to begin in the first chapter of your book that will kind of put a perspective on what you're trying to do here. Most of us think of wealth, we think of it in dollars and cents. We define it, the assets we own, the dollars we have in the bank, how many stocks, bonds. At your group, you define wealth in a different way. I wonder if you'd share that with our audience.
Yeah, I'm happy to. You know, that's really the central point of our work with families. From our perspective, we think there's a focus imbalance where most people will pay attention to wealth as being the asset. In our world, the wealth is really the family values. It is the family network. It is the family themselves. It could be the commitment to education they have. That would be another value. But without a strong, unified family, the wealth can't really continue in a significant way. So that, for us, is really important for us to define wealth as being something that the family itself is responsible for generating, not just assets, but family unity.
Amy, I wonder if you can explain why, when we think of, you know, the great families of wealth, why is it 70% of families are unprepared or unlikely to transfer wealth successfully?
Yeah. My experience with that is that families just don't learn how to talk about money, Jim. It's a taboo topic and has been culturally, really across the globe, for a very long time. So they're not really educated in being able to have conversations about money that are meaningful and that move a conversation forward. Their concern is that it's going to end up creating, oh, maybe somebody will seem like they're greedy, or it's not an appropriate conversation to have, or mom and dad might be afraid to have the conversation because they don't want to upset the kids, or they don't want to have the kids think that now they don't have to work anymore. So often they will avoid that conversation entirely, and yet our work is really about teaching them how to have that conversation for the sake of how the wealth can be a force for good in the family, as opposed to just talking about the money.
Yeah, because in your book, you talk about 60% of the failure has to do with trust, communication, 25% is failure to prepare heirs, 10% no family mission. Now, when you wrote this book, you were thinking of four different types of individuals. One, first generation wealth creators. Number two, the more tenured wealthy, those with the so-called, what we call old money today. Three, a successor to a wealth creator, and four, advisors like myself, bankers, estate planners, and attorney. I wonder if you could just briefly describe what your mission was for each one of those people.
Absolutely. So the first generation wealth creator is really the one that is in the corner seat for how this wealth is going to impact their family. And very often, they are the people who have committed themselves to learning and growing empires and just being very, very successful. And so with that comes a certain kind of perspective that says, I'm going to be responsible for all this. I'm going to manage this. I'm going to control this. And yet when that moment comes that they need to transition the wealth, they find that they can't control its impact on the next generation, especially when that moment comes where they are no longer with us. Although they try to design estate plans that have a lot of governance and take care of taxes and preserve the wealth, they can't control how it's going to impact the lives of their family. And so we wanted to raise their awareness on how important it is to have the voices of the generation that's going to continue the wealth be included not only in how they design their estate plans, but knowing what's going to be expected of them and how they can contribute to the wealth so that it continues across generations. So there's an awareness piece and an opportunity for them to see, okay, I know how to run a company. I might not know how to have these conversations, and here's a resource for them.
The next one was, you were talking about not only just the person that created the wealth, but also, you know, the generation of old money.
Yep. And the old money generation, we find that often they have a really strong sense of values. We can almost spot, if you will, the new money versus the old money, because the old money folks have the money sort of fall into the background. And what becomes more paramount for them is purpose, is why am I on this planet and what's important to me and making the world a better place by the time I leave. So their focus is deeply rooted in the family values that have created the wealth and more about the identity of who that family is. And so we wanted to be able to articulate that so that they could start putting words around how to continue their wealth for generations to come as well.
And then the final one was advisors.
Yeah, they really are in that quarterback seat. Many advisors are really strongly rooted in the analytics and analysis of what they do. They have answers for how to grow wealth. They have answers on how to protect the wealth. They have answers on how to transition the wealth. But when it comes to the family, that sometimes feels like a wheelhouse that they're not that familiar with. And so what we were hoping to do with this book is give them another resource where they could expand their service offering so that they're not just taking care of the money, they can now take care of the family in a more holistic way by asking these important questions, by bringing their awareness to the three core drivers that have a family be successful. As you mentioned, trust and communication skills. Do they know how to have a conversation about which son is now considered the CEO and does he really want that job? Or do they know how to have the conversation with the next generation that's living in a house that they can't really afford and they have to go back to dad and ask for money every month? How's that feeling for them? Do they know how to have a conversation with mom about what's important to her when the wealth transfers, and does she feel like she has a good handle on it? So that trust and communication piece. On the heir readiness piece, they can ask questions about the heir's relationship to the wealth, not just how they access it. In other words, is the wealth running their lives, or are they gaining in responsibility about with their role with respect to managing that wealth? And then finally, on the values and mission, can they ask the wealth creator if everybody's on board with what he would like to see the purpose of the wealth be? Or is he just going to leave that to chance?
Amy, have you noticed in the work that you've done with families a difference philosophically between generations? For example, the greatest generation, the baby boomers, and now we have Gen X and Gen Y and Gen Z.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I can tell you that they all want the same thing. They all want family unity at the end of the day. They want to be able to have honest communication from generation across generation. One of the biggest things we see is the influence of technology on the younger generation. When we work with families, what's most important to us is that they have built enough trust with each other where they can be candid. And that only happens in face-to-face communication. It happens around the dinner table. It happens in building a certain muscle of being able to be communicative, or even, I'm going to use the word intimate, in their conversation so that they can be authentic. Sometimes we see technology pulls people more into a isolated place where they don't have to have as much conversation. And so that skill doesn't quite get developed the way it should be. So we do see that showing up in family meetings, and it's a great conversation topic to have about how to make sure those younger generations keep building that muscle of intimacy and connection.
You know, it's interesting in your book, you talk about the U.S. Trust Survey, the worries that affluent parents have about the effect their own wealth will have on their children. We've heard stories about, you know, one of the richest men in the world, like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, who basically are given the majority of their wealth to their foundations. A number of things in the survey, too much emphasis on material things, naive about the value of money, spend beyond their means, initiative ruined by this affluence. Do you come across this very often? In other words, when you're working with super wealthy families that are worried about the wealth being transferred to their children, are these concerns that come up in conversation frequently?
Every time there isn't a client that comes to us and doesn't say, you know, I'm here because I'm concerned about this wealth tearing the family apart. Every single one of them have that concern. And yet when they started building the wealth, it was because they wanted to give their kids a better life. And so that concern of 60% of too much emphasis on material things, I would even say that the overall concern is probably 90% that this wealth is not going to unite the family, but rather it's going to tear them apart. We had a father come to us and his concern was, you know, I'm going to be passing on these millions to my kids and I'm concerned that they're going to take advantage of their mom. In other words, he felt like, boy, once I'm gone, who's going to be here to make sure that mom is taken care of? And so in the family meeting, we were able to talk about that very concern and teach them the skills on how to make sure that mom understands her role and what are the actual qualifications and does she need to learn something? And if it's not going to be her, who will it be? And so it just became a great topic of conversation where at the end of it, everybody felt much more confident and at ease with what was originally a very big concern.
You know, a lot of, as you talk in your book, one of the reasons a lot of wealth transfers fail are basically over 70% are derailed by family dynamics. You mentioned a case where, let's say there's a family business and one son's put in charge of it who's not really qualified. He may be put in charge because he's the oldest. How do you rectify that? Because you talk about in your book, there's a quiz that you have, and I wonder if you could just cover these briefly to assess your wealth transition plan. In other words, if you're Larry Lots of Bucks or Michael Megabucks and you really have a large estate here, what are some of the things that you should question to know if you're really prepared to hand off to the next generation?
You know, first and foremost, I think the most critical thing is that the family has a wealth mission statement, that they have all talked about the purpose and the context for the wealth. Is it something that we're just going to work our way through in this generation? Or is it something that we want to be accountable for passing on to the next generation? Or is it something that dad is going to say, you know, guys, I'd rather donate this money and have you guys build your own fortunes. I'll give you enough, but not so much to cause trouble. Without having a conversation about the purpose and the context, the family members are really adrift in what they're up to. There isn't a cohesive plan. The second thing that I think is most important is that football analogy that Roy was famous for. It really does tell the story in a great analogy. So as it exists currently, mom and dad are kind of the executors for the will and for the estate. And their front line are the accountants, the CPAs, the financial advisors. When the time comes that that ball or that estate plan has to be passed to the heir, and the heirs have never seen the playbook, then they have no idea what they need to do to make sure that this wealth is protected. More often than not, mom and dad are afraid to tell the kids what the plan is. When the kids don't know, they're out there playing against the masters, which could be the Bernie Madoffs of the world, or a well-intended college student that they met when they were going to Yale, who's starting their own private equity firm, and they think that would be a great investment. So long story short, it's really letting the kids know what is expected of them, what's coming their way, so that they're not struggling when that moment comes. Those would be the top two. And then the third one to really pay attention to is learning how to have those conversations that have been repressed or maybe they haven't been willing to have because they're not sure how to bring them up. Building the skills to do that successfully is essential. For example, in the situation you mentioned, in that case, the oldest son actually started to turn towards alcohol because he really didn't want to be the CEO of the company. It's just that he had been doing it for so long and so much was riding on him. he didn't know how to say no. But I'll be honest, once we brought that topic up, his hand was way in the air in how to find a way to have a more peaceful, rewarding life of his own and get this albatross off of his neck. Once we had that conversation, we were able to find an outside person to run the company, and everybody settled down and was really much happier. So, good example, how to have those important conversations is key. Find a place to learn how to build trust and have those conversations.
You, in your book, describe a roadmap or a process to help get you there. I wonder if you could cover some of those, because you know, you talked about trust, communication. It's very important. You just mentioned the issue where the one son really wasn't equipped to run a company. And so you get maybe a successor management team to come in and take over from the founder. But if you were to put a map, you know, a simple step process, step one, step two, step three, what were the things you would tell people that you need to do?
You know, there's really five steps. And the first step is for the wealth creator to take the initiative so that he's not or her leaving the impact of the wealth to chance. I know they think that they've got it sewn up with high-priced attorneys and estate developers, and they think it's an ironclad plan. I can tell you that once they pass, if they haven't had the right conversations at the right time, the only unity that's left is the family coming together to pool their resources to change the will. So step one is for that family wealth creator, the mom or dad, start to learn the skills and become aware that this is an important piece to pay attention to. We have a tool that we find is effective there. It's that 50-question survey where they can just take the pulse of how the family is doing on those three core drivers, the trust and communication levels, the air readiness level, the alignment of the purpose and the mission of the wealth. Focus there, and then you can design around that. The second piece is to secure the plan by articulating those family values. So first, you've got to make sure there's enough trust in the room for people to be honest about what they really care about. Because without that honesty, all you have is cordial hypocrisy. That's that moment that everybody shows up for Easter brunch and everybody wants to talk about the deviled eggs because nobody really wants to talk about the elephant in the room, which is that their brother hates his job or that their sister can't afford the house she's living in. So the second step is really, once you've got trust and communication flat, get everyone together and let's talk about who we are as a family, what are our values, and what's going to allow us to stay together. The third piece is that action plan. So once they've built that family values and mission, it's taking a look at what are the behaviors that are going to have that mission be lived instead of just exist in a drawer somewhere. That happens by looking at the mission plan. So very often families will include something that says, enjoy our rewards. That might be a sentence in their mission plan. How does that actually happen? If the family says, oh, we're going to take a cruise every year, how is that going to get paid for? Does that come out of everybody's pocket, or is there one lump sum that comes out of? And for how many years out? So there, they work with their advisor to operationalize their mission. Another big one that shows up in the mission plan is education. So does that mean they're going to pay for all 4 years? And is there some standard attached to that they have to maintain a certain GPA? Does it have to connect to some career they're interested in? Does it include a first-class ticket across the country? So start putting some of the standards around what they mean by education and at the same time perpetuating the family values. We had a situation on that one where the daughter wanted to have her education paid for. However, it was for her 2-year-old daughter that had a French-speaking nanny. So she essentially wanted the nanny to be paid for. When they brought this back to the family council, the family was able to say, no, we've already defined education, and this is what it means as a way to perpetuate our family values. That leans a little bit towards entitlement, so we're going to say no. So you can see there how they operationalize the family values and mission through what we call the glossary. That action plan is very important. The fourth step is this place where they talk about roles and aspirations. So one of the things we often see is that that next generation, and sometimes even the wealth creators, mom or dad, might decide they want to leave the business and start a whole nother venture. When they've reached the point where they're making millions, it's not so much about making more money, but they're not really sure what they care about or even where to start. So we start looking at what are the aspirations of everyone in the family. Do they want to run their own business if they're second or third generation? And do they then have to work with an outside party to build a business plan? Or if it's mom or dad, are they interested in volunteer work? Or do they want to run water in villages in Africa? We've seen that happen. So that place where they really get clear and they take action steps on their roles and their aspirations gets them on a purposeful path. And then the last place, that number five, is preparing the heirs, telling them the plan, making sure they're on board with it, making sure that everybody's hearing it at the same time, making sure that they understand their role in it. So, for example, if one of the big financial houses is going to manage the wealth, what's their role in making sure those advisors are doing the job they're supposed to be doing? How do they know whether or not their estate or their portfolio is lining up properly? Do they even know what questions to ask? So not dismissing the responsibility, but taking accountability for what they should be able to understand or not understand. So those five steps we think are kind of the whole ball of wax. It's taking the initiative. It's securing a plan by making sure you've got the family values articulated. It's putting those values into an action plan so that behaviors can be operationalized to support the values. It's knowing what everybody's role and aspiration and goals are so that they have a purpose. And the fifth one is preparing the heirs, making sure they know what their role is in the transition of the wealth.
Amy, let me talk about the role that your organization plays, and it's something that individuals with a lot of wealth sometimes don't think of. And the reason I'm bringing this up, you take a wealthy family, they probably have good tax accountants, they have good lawyers, they have good advisors. Now, each one of those are kind of like a specialist. It's kind of like a medical specialist, like an internist. But there's nobody there as a coach that sees the bigger picture, that sees the family dynamics, and why a coach can be important, especially bridging the gap. And especially if you have, as you mentioned, that case where the one individual was put in charge of the company that he really didn't have the role or the background to play. Describe the role of a coach, if you would.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that question. We get to listen. We get to help the family members find their voice. We get to help the family members generate conflict in a productive way. So often families are afraid to have conversations. And in our world, conflict is generative. That's how we can get to the next stage. And that's how we can have a family stay together so that their wealth can be a force that improves the world for generations to come. Every family wants to be strong. They want to be united. They want to belong and they want to be proud. And when we can bring a family together and they reach a new level of that, boy, there's nothing more fulfilling. We had a family of eight kids and the dad worked his butt off. He came from nothing. I mean, powdered milk. And he was doing his best. He thought that by working this hard and generating this kind of money, everybody's just going to be better off. Well, of course, what happened over time is he disappeared into his work and the kids kind of lost touch with him. They would only show up when they wanted things. Ultimately, what finally happened is when we got everybody in a room together, the youngest kid, who was about 21, 22 at the time, got a little choked up. He got tears in his eyes. So as a coach, I turned to him and I said, "Hey, Ben, what's happening over there?" And he said, "You know, this is the first time I feel like we have a real family. I used to go to my friend's house to find out how families really behave. And now I can see we really have one." So from that point on, the family just resumed. They came together and they could start to be more proud of who they are and what their contribution in the world can be. It was less about the money, more about who they were. That's what we get to do.
Well, you know, in large families, and especially when the wealth comes from, let's say, a private enterprise, that is so important, especially when you have different family members, because I've just seen all kinds of legal battles, all kinds of things because of family dynamics. And then you throw in not just family, but let's say opposite spouses, they get involved in their opinion, and you can have just an ugly mix of emotions and dynamics that go on that can basically self-destruct any kind of legacy or estate plan. Amy, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out more about the work that you do, how could they contact you, please?
Well, they can reach us through our website. That's thewilliamsgroup.org. Our book is available on Amazon. That's easy. And they can just simply call our office, 949-940-9140. Be happy to chat with them.
Yeah, the name of the book is called Bridging Generations, Transitioning Family Wealth and Values for a Sustainable Legacy. And I can't recommend it high enough, especially if you're listening and you're fortunate enough to be blessed with a large estate, a large enterprise or business that you've created. And you're thinking now you're at that age, how do I pass this on and how do I make this a legacy and productive? This is a good starting point. Amy, thank you so much for joining us on the program. Great work.
Oh, thanks so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
That concludes my interview with Amy Castoro. You know, it's really amazing, that statistic, and Amy and I were talking off the air, the 85%, it's not 70%, it's almost 85% in terms of failure. And I read a statistic somewhere that by the third generation, the wealth is gone, which is why you see people like Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and others that have billions and billions of dollars that put their money in foundations so that there's a purpose to it. So if you are one of those individuals that's fortunate, maybe you've built a large estate through hard work, blood, sweat, and tears, and you're thinking about what happens to that wealth in the next generation, highly recommend you pick up a copy of the book. It's called Bridging Generations by Roy Williams and Amy Castoro. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.